You join me here on RNIB Connect Radio at the Beyond the Visual Symposium here at Wellcome Collection. And I'm joined by Georgina Kleege. Georgina is a writer. She was former lecturer as well. And Georgina will be delivering the keynote speech at the end of this symposium. Georgina, you've obviously written about and experienced art as a blind person, and you're obviously going to be delivering the keynote speech and probably reflecting on your experiences of art and maybe with a few resolutions as well. Mm-hmm. Could you give listeners a sort of brief idea of what you're going to be talking about in your keynote speech?
Well, the title of my speech is Repeating Myself, and the subtitles is Reflections, Regrets and Resolutions. And I'm talking about, it's a coincidence, but it was 20 years ago, almost to the day, that I first talked on this topic, and that was at the Tate Modern. And it was at a conference called Beyond Ocular Centrism that was organized by Fiona Canlan, who was here last night. And so it just felt like a good opportunity to think about what's changed over those 20 years and what still needs to be changed, and maybe what stands in the way of change that I'd like to have happen.
What do you see as those things that still stand in the way? I mean, access and inclusion of art for blind and partially sighted people has developed over the years and it has got better, but I think there's still a lot to be done.
Yeah, I think what stands in the way is that there's still kind of a very limited understanding of what blind people can do and can understand and can conceptualize. Because people, as you know, come to, you know, most people don't necessarily know a blind person. And so their ideas of what blindness is maybe come from movies or novels. So it's very limited understanding what blind people can do. And in the museum sector, you know, depending on who's working on it, they may be influenced by those ideas as well. So in some sense, there's still that barrier, is thinking about what is the image of blindness and how can we dislodge that. But you're right, there is a lot more access programming available in museums around the world. You can go to a museum website and look up and see what's there. And that wasn't true 20 years ago. If you could find anything, it was, you know, hard to find. 20 years ago, I think it was more of a kind of a one-off. You know, oh, we have this particular exhibit, and for this one time only, we're going to have a tactile model, or we're going to have audio description. And then that exhibit closed, and then nothing. So I think there's beginning to be more demand in the blind and visually impaired communities, that people are willing to go to institutions and say, what do you have? And then afterwards to supply feedback, what worked, what didn't work. And so that there's more of a chance that knowledge gets perpetuated. And I think the other thing that's been very evident in this conference is that there's such a growing community of blind and visually impaired artists who really are kind of leading the way by creating projects that deal imaginatively with access and how it might be done and how it might be done better. And so if there's interest in the art world in that work and those artists, that perhaps can then translate into the institution through the education departments.
And how do you see the involvement of more blind and partially sighted people? And, you know, as we've seen over these 2 days, you know, some great examples of blind and partially sighted artists, there's great examples of people getting involved in access and consultancy and things like that. But what can be done to get greater access? Is there still a more of a need of blind and partially sighted people getting involved, becoming artists, becoming consultants, and in collaborative working with museums and galleries?
Yeah, I think there's, I like your word consultancy rather than, I think in the past institutions would sort of round up a group of random blind people that they found who knows where and say, look, we've invented this thing and why don't you come in and evaluate it? So a focus group, you know. And I've participated in those sorts of things. I'm sure you've participated in those sorts of things. And what I realized the problem is, is they're asking you to evaluate something that's already done, basically. They may ask you some, you know, minor tweak. But I'm more and more inclined to say no to those. I won't serve on your focus group, because I realize that if you're asking me now and the exhibit is going to open in 2 months, it's too late. You're already behind the curve on access. That access needs to be in your plan from the beginning. And when people are disappointed or surprised that I'm not, you know, oh, we were doing this to help you, and I said, no, you're doing this to help me. You should have been thinking about it months ago when the plan for an exhibit or whatever it was launched.
Do you see, obviously, as you've traveled a lot as well, do you see there's a difference in inclusion and access from different countries, and could there be more collaborative working or more sort of, I suppose, crossing of information and ideas about how to make inclusion better?
Oh, definitely, definitely. You know, I think it's always true when you travel, it always seems like it's better somewhere else, you know. I've always felt that in Britain, there's more things happening. And then the British friends come to the States and they say, oh, we don't have anything like this back home. So I think it is just a matter of trading information and trading what people take for granted as what can be done, you know. So if you are accustomed to going to a museum and that they have a good audio tour and that you know it's always available and you don't have to book it months in advance and all that sort of stuff, to share that information with friends and colleagues who are elsewhere and say, you know, name the museum and say it's been done, they learned how to do it, your local museum should contact them and see how it's done. So I think the importance of a symposium like this is precisely because people get to share information and share knowledge. And I think even within the British context, there's been a lot of speakers who have been talking about something somewhere, and other speakers, oh, here in London, we don't do that. And so I think just to have the information to write down who's doing what where, and then to be able to go to a local organization and say, it's been done, they know how to do it, you don't have to invent the wheel. If you just contact the education department at this or that institution, that will be good. And the other thing, and this picks up on something that people were talking about in the last panel, I feel like there's beginning to be a shift away from the idea of access as for, in this case, the blind and visually impaired community. So thinking, okay, so you have something and then you provide access to this group who's been excluded. And I'm sort of pushing the notion of these access, what we think of as access features, actually make the thing better for everybody. And so I'm starting to think of it as inclusion for sighted people, because there's a lot of evidence that sighted people appreciate audio description in movies and theater and in art contexts. In my own experience of touch tours at museums, so tactile experiences in museums, when sighted people see blind people doing that, they say, oh, I wonder, what's that like? I really wish I could do that, you know? And so I say to museums, yeah, people want to do this. And of course, they're horrified. Oh, no, everybody's going to get their dirty hands on the artwork. But rather than thinking of it as an obligation or something that's expensive or whatever, is to think of it as an exciting, though challenging, opportunity to give everybody new experiences in the art gallery. And so then you erase this distinction of, oh, they're the blind people over here and they need this thing, and the sighted people don't need that thing. Well, maybe we need to sort of move away from that model.
Well, I think that's a great thing to end on. I think audio description and access and inclusion is for everybody. Georgina, thank you so much for joining me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having me.